Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Joining you in a very different place this week than the Milwaukee Brewers were at this time last week. Last week, they were coming off a weekend sweep of the best team in the National League, the Chicago Cubs. This week, different story. Weekend sweep at the hands of the worst team in baseball, the Pittsburgh Pirates. Feeling a little different this week if you are a Milwaukee Brewers fan. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast, and I'm joined again by Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Read everything he has at jsonline.com. After we talk to Todd, I have a conversation with Ethan Small. He was the Brewers' first-round draft selection last year, top pitching prospect in the organization, and right now he is in Appleton, part of the alternate training site group. He's probably not going to be with the big league team this year, but certainly a guy to watch. He's interesting. Interesting prospect for sure, a left-handed pitcher, and someone Brewers fans I know, he's already on their radar, and will be someone that we're talking about here in the next couple years. Todd, last week I kind of just opened with sort of a state of the Brewers thing. Felt like this team was getting all the clutch hits, getting all the big pitching performances, and hanging in there despite their offense struggling. This week it feels like everything pretty much went wrong, especially in this Pirates series. Gut punch of a loss on Sunday, but same story, right? The offense just does not seem to be clicking. I guess just in general, what have you seen over the past six games, and do you feel like there's any silver lining pointing to this team turning it around a little bit on offense?
Yeah, I mean, what a difference a week makes for sure. You know, losing a series in Minnesota to the Twins, really good team, you can stomach that. Offense obviously was very spotty up there. But going to Pittsburgh, worst team in baseball, worst offense in baseball, you certainly expect to win a series if you're a good team, not to go in there and get swept and really just get your butt handed to you on top of it. You know, first two games especially, they were competitive here on Sunday. Still lost the game, but just really every facet let them down at some point during this weekend. Offense was a big no-show the entire weekend. Now the pitching is kind of springing some leaks a little bit here, the first couple days especially. And, you know, here today, as we record this on Sunday night, you know, Corbin Burnes was okay starting. And then David Phelps obviously gave up the game-deciding homer in the eighth to Gregory Polanco. Should we call him Babe Polanco now, hitting something coming into the series, and I think he's back up to 300 now. Just kidding. But, you know, the defense had its rough moments as well. So, excuse me, just pretty much everything that could have gone wrong went wrong this weekend, and my mind, plus it rained. Let's not forget that either. You know, of course.
Were they playing in Pittsburgh? That is 100% a given.
Yeah. So we got to throw that in there as well, but you know, obviously different year, different circumstances, especially in 2020, but this series to me recalled the doom and gloom, if everybody remembers that five-game sweep they suffered to the Pirates right going into the All-Star break in 2018. Just everybody was ready to write them off at that point. And obviously things turned around and they had a heck of a year. Finished up in the playoffs and everything. I'm not suggesting that's going to happen this year, but kind of similar feeling where you just leave that ballpark and end a trip just like, wow, what happened? You know, and it just not a good showing for sure. So they're going to need to get back on their feet and quickly here coming up with a big homestand at Miller Park starting on Monday.
Just an all-time series, that set of five in 2018. Very famously, the rains came in the mid. It was one of the doubleheader games. I want to say that was on Saturday. That might have been Sunday, but they managed to lose a game from the clutches of victory. It was a horrible situation, and they bounced back though. They made the playoffs. They did so convincingly, and obviously over the course of this season, they still could too. They're only four games under 500, which in the macro isn't a big deal, but unquestionably, you know, in the sprint that is this season, they are behind the eight ball now, and they've started to make some changes in that offense. Brock Holt, one of the many guys brought in this offseason on a short-term deal, ended up getting designated for assignment. He was struggling mightily. He wasn't a guy who was getting, I would say, starters at bats, but he was, I want to say, 3 for 30, and the club decided they just had to try something else. I don't know if we can expect that to happen a lot. I mean, he was playing a position that they seem to be pretty covered at. You know, they kind of have their infielders. But there's so many guys struggling. I mean, you could easily, and guys on short-term deals, you could see this Brewers team tinker with this, experiment with it, especially with the trade deadline coming up. Do you think Holt's situation was unusual in a way that, you know, he might be the only guy we see handled this way? I guess Logan Morrison falls into the camp too. Or do you think there are more moves, you know, even beside the trade deadline, more moves on the horizon to try to jumpstart this thing?
Yeah, you know, David Stearns talked this morning, and Craig Counsell said yesterday after they made the move that obviously 36 plate appearances is pretty quick to pull the plug, but this is not a standard year by any means. And with time really kind of running short here on the season, you know, you have to do what you can to try to shake things up when things are not going right. And let's not kid ourselves and say Brock Holt was some, you know, key piece that was, you know, playing every day or even playing much of a role. But, you know, at this point, any kind of boost they can get offensively, they certainly will welcome. And, you know, before Brock Holt was DFA'd, we got a chance to talk to him last week, and he was pretty frank about just feeling like, you know, his mind wasn't totally here. A lot of his attention was back home in Texas, where his wife is 8 months pregnant. He has a young son, and that's understandable. And he even talked about right after summer camp had reopened that he didn't feel like he could opt out because he felt like his career might be in jeopardy moving forward. That might be it for his career. So he stuck it out and tried to play. And ultimately, maybe that was the wrong move. You know, his role was not really defined. He never got going at the plate, and it just kind of went south from there. So, you know, let's not kid ourselves and think that, you know, his replacement, Jace Peterson, is going to play any different of a role. Of course, he's going to be the same kind of left-handed bat off the bench, play different positions and that sort of thing. But it was just getting to the point where it was hard to ignore a guy who had managed 3 singles all season and 1 RBI. It's, you know, you feel like you can definitely get more out of a spot than that. So, you know, you mentioned Logan Morrison, he was DFA'd earlier in the season. So, you know, that doesn't really answer the major issue with the offense, which remains just a lack of performance up and down. You know, you've got guys doing it in spots. Yelich, you know, finally heated up a little bit. You know, Hira, the common names, but, you know, Sunday in Pittsburgh, Omar Narvaez, go figure, he finally woke up and snapped out of it a little bit. Justin Smoke, you know, they need more consistent performances from these guys across the board if they're really going to start trying to make a move here in the standings. So, you know, again, maybe coming home will be the solution for that. Maybe it'll help wake up the bats a little bit, get them out of their doldrums. But then at the same time, you know, you come home and who are you facing? The Cincinnati Reds, underachieving as well. But we all saw what Trevor Bauer can do earlier this season, actually the last homestand against the Brewers. I haven't looked at the rest of the probables. I'm assuming they'll see Luis Castillo at some point, Sonny Gray. Those are all guys that have handled the Brewers in the past. So it's definitely not going to get any easier from an opposing pitching standpoint once they do get home.
No, definitely not. And I don't know how much this thought experiment that I have gets you in terms of thinking about how this team would have been built if we knew that it was going to be a short-term season instead of the typical one. I mean, it's easy to say that this team was built for the long haul, having guys, flexible guys at different positions and guys with high variance who might not cost as much money, but are guys who could bounce back, things like that. I don't know if the Brewers would have done anything differently. I think they probably would have more strongly considered re-signing Yasmani Grandal, but I do think I think they probably would have gone after a lot of these guys anyway. I think this team was built like a Brewers philosophy, you know, regardless of the length of season, philosophy-wise. I don't know. Am I off base with that? Do you think they would have approached this completely differently if they knew they didn't have 162 games to play with, or do you think that this would be it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can see what they were trying to do with 162 game season. I thought Tom wrote a really good piece about, you know, basically they were relying on a bunch of veterans who, you know, have been average to slightly above average this season to, or over the course of their career to at least play that way over the course of a full season in 2020. You know, that obviously was taken out of the equation with the shortened season and all that. And to have so many of these guys go south and not come close to living up to their former season or career averages all in one season, it's just kind of taken its toll. So, you know, looking back in retrospect, it's really hard to guess. You know, had they known it was going to be a short season or whatever the case may be, maybe they would have tried to go for one or two more high impact guys. But then again, there's no guarantee that those guys were going to perform either, because we've seen, you know, how many big name guys this year struggle too, and they've got one on the team right now, Christian Yelich. So,
or guys get hurt, you know, like you can't put all your eggs in a pitcher basket this year because they could get hurt.
Yeah, exactly. So it's you know, it's a guessing game, and again, it's one of those kind of fascinating storylines that we talked about on the podcast coming into the season, just how fascinating this 2 month sprint was going to be in so many regards. And you know, that is just another facet of it. So, you know, who knows? Time is definitely running short. It sounds so weird to think, you know, to say that, you know, we're getting ready to turn the page on August here and get into September, and with the trade deadline coming up here in a week, it's really going to be interesting to see what the Brewers wind up doing. You know, do they see themselves as buyers or sellers? They've only got a week to figure it out. You know, if they perform poorly on this homestand, is that going to automatically make them sellers? You know, with the expanded playoff field, do they feel like they're, you know, they need just one or two extra little pieces can kind of push them over the top? So we'll see. This next week to 10 days is going to be very interesting.
Easily the most fascinating trade deadline. I mean, I don't know how anything could surpass it, simply because, I mean, I feel like trying to handicap what any team is going to do right now is like trying to handicap a slot machine. It's just random. I mean, like, you're right, the Red Series might completely inform what the Brewers end up doing. And even if they do decide, oh, they're sellers, they're still within shouting distance of a playoff spot. That's undeniable because of the way it's set up. And, you know, it's easy to remember for Brewers fans, the last two seasons, September is where this team really made hay. The last month of the season, everything changed for them. And it certainly could with much less, you know, of a winning output because everything is so much more congested. Do you have any inclination as to if the Brewers were sellers, whom they might be, you know, who they might get, you know, trade inquiries for? Or if they're buyers, what area they're going to look to upgrade? I mean, I assume offense, but I don't know what position on the field per se.
Yeah, I mean, sellers, you have to figure that they wouldn't be interested in moving any of their young core pieces. So, you know, you're looking to deal guys like the Smokes and the Jerkos and that sort of thing. And to be honest, I mean, obviously with the way they perform, you're really not going to get much or anything in return. So if the Brewers decide they are sellers, maybe it just winds up being they're just trying to save money. You know, that very well could be. David Stern said this morning that, you know, in regard to the trade deadline, you know, if they're looking to add, the what they'd be looking at is bringing on guys that have years of control after this year. So, you know, you would throw the, like, for instance, the Drew Pomeranz trade from last year, that wouldn't be something they would be looking to do, just kind of a rent-a-player, you know, because you're giving away valuable pieces to bring somebody in like that, and, you know, for a month, and then no guarantees after that. So would definitely kind of an interesting scenario, so to speak, you know, what they would be looking to do there. You know, you look at just look at the pieces that they have to offer to the Brewers, at least from a minor league perspective. You know, their cupboard is a little bit bare in the minor leagues. Let's be honest, their higher impact prospects are all basically in the lower levels of the minors. And, you know, guys that they're probably looking at is being, you know, core pieces moving forward. Do you really want to move those guys as well? You know, several of them, to get a big name guy? I don't know. It's going to be interesting. And, you know, a lot of people were trying to put two and two together with the Brewers bringing more of these guys up to Appleton to be part of that step 60 player pool, under the assumption that they had to be in that pool to be traded. And David Stern's shot that down and said that's not necessarily the case. So, you know, trade deadline is always the most favorite thing of people, it seems like, every year. And I don't think this year will be any different, but I just don't see like the huge trades getting done that we have in years past. I think it's going to wind up being more, you know, kind of like what the Phillies and the Red Sox pulled off the other day, just, you know, some pieces, so to speak. And, you know, you look at guys that are on the Brewers right now, you know, if you're looking to sell, if you're the Brewers, veteran guy, you know, a guy that makes some money and you're looking to save a little bit of money, a guy that maybe you get something for. How about Phelps? You know, I know he blew the game today, but a guy that's bounced back and pitched well, bullpen pieces are always valuable this time of year. You know, to me, that would be a guy that would make sense and that would probably gather some interest from a contending team. So that's probably my best guess right now.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good assumption. Justin Smoke for sure. Maybe Eric Sogard, although he's on a 2-year deal, correct? Or is he only on a 1-year with an option?
I believe he's another 1-year with an option. I'd have to double check that, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, a couple of the guys that you're talking about in this young core that the Brewers got a look at over the past week, Drew Rasmussen and Angel Perdomo. Mixed results. Drew Rasmussen had a phenomenal debut, but did get touched up a little bit in his next outing. Angel Perdomo, certainly a guy that you expect to just get better and better and better, probably, you know, not necessarily there yet, but gets his feet wet in big league baseball. What did you see from those two guys? I don't know if we're going to see Rasmussen on this team all year long. We might. I guess there's no way to know for sure, but, you know, he's still here. Perdomo could be back later, not sure. What did you see out of these two guys?
Saw glimpses of some of two relievers who could be really good in the future, but also the reason why they, you know, they obviously still need some seasoning. Rasmussen, power arm guys, you know, capable of hitting 100. I think I counted that the night he made his debut in Minnesota last week, 39 pitches, I believe 21 or 22 of them were clocked at 98 or higher. So you obviously love that coming out of the bullpen, but at the same time, this is the major leagues and guys can hit that. So the challenge with him is going to be refining and fine tuning that off speed stuff. You know, he's got a really good slider, struggling a little bit with his control with that pitch. If he can dial that in a little bit and then also get his curveball over more consistently, then you're talking about a guy that's a potential, you know, has kind of closer material there, closer repertoire, and definitely closer type velocity. So a guy for sure to be on the to watch moving forward. I believe we had him at number 9 on our JS top 10 prospects list that we did at the end of spring training this year. And then Perdomo, fascinating guy. He looks like he should be playing low post for the Bucks rather than pitching. A huge guy. And a guy that had never pitched above high A before this year. He was in the Toronto organization and just kind of really came out of nowhere. He obviously is a little bit further behind Rasmussen, did not show very well in his few outings that he had for the Brewers. Granted, he was thrown in a couple of very tough spots, unlike Rasmussen, where he was Rasmussen got the pitch in a blowout game. So Perdomo's control, a little bit spotty. I think the moments were a little bit too big for him. But you can see why the Brewers like him. He looks like he throws an easy 94, 95 lefty, has some funk to him. And then he's just so big that, you know, Rasmussen was joking when he played catch with him in Appleton. It was almost like he was handing him the ball. He's so long. You know, that arm is so long. So certainly two guys to be excited about for the future. And Perdomo was sent back down in favor of JP Feiereisen. Not a surprise, not a slight by any means to him. He just has to keep pitching, keep gaining experience, and certainly is a guy that I would expect to see back in the mix, maybe not this year, but in seasons to come.
Yeah, so I want to rewind about speaking of David Phelps out of the bullpen. We mentioned Sunday was Sunday. He gives up the 2-run homer to Gregory Polanco. Phelps has been one of the unquestioned bright spots of the team so far this year, and the bullpen in general has been very good, even though they did now get roughed up in this Pirates series. I talked to Tom a little bit about the usage of Josh Hader, and I saw some rumblings that, you know, maybe Hader should have come in for the lefty in that third out in the eighth. I personally would have had no problem with David Phelps. I mean, the guy's been awesome, but it does sort of reopen the fact that Craig Counsell has said he really wants to use Josh Hader very, very much like a traditional closer this year, that he's going to keep things pretty simple, use him in situations like what the ninth inning would have been if Polanco hadn't homered. I'm curious what you think of that. Does that surprise you? Because especially in this weird season, you know, where everything's kind of open to experimentation, it surprises me that the Brewers would be pulling back a little bit on Hader's usage. You can't argue with the results, and obviously he's done very well this year, but he hasn't pitched much as a result of kind of keeping him for those particular spots. How do you look at that? Does that surprise you that Craig Counsell's changing his strategy a little bit with Hader?
You know, I think they've probably all had many discussions about this as an organization and decided that, you know, in order to help him with his durability, help him to bounce back, and to help him pitch more frequently, keeping him to one-inning stints is probably the way to go. But, you know, the guy hasn't pitched since Tuesday, and it's hard to pitch him in save situations when you're not winning games in the eighth and the ninth inning, obviously. So if we've learned anything about Craig Counsell during his tenure as Brewers manager, it's just that he's very rigid in his beliefs, and he likes to play matchups and does not waver from the things that he does believe in. I think most fans know that he abhors bunting at this point, heavy believer in shifting, that sort of thing. And again, a lot of that stuff is determined with analytics and organizationally as well. But, you know, I definitely think an argument could be made for sure. You know, why not bring Josh Hader in for the lefty-lefty matchup? He'd only be facing, you know, if things go according to plan, one more hitter at that point. So you're getting four outs instead of three. He was obviously well rested. But, you know, Craig Counsell's answer was it was David Phelps's inning. So, you know, I mean, that's on him. But I definitely think there's an argument to be made there that Hader could have been used in that situation. So we'll see, you know, like, moving forward here, how many more days is he going to go without pitching? You know, if the Brewers lose, if in a losing situation tomorrow, Monday against the Reds, Tuesday, you know, you've basically not used them for a week, and you're going to have to pitch them in a meaningless situation just to get them some work. So, again, you know, he sticks to his guns on things, and that's one of these things that he feels strongly about this year, and that's the way he's going to go.
Really felt like that Sunday game was the first time we really saw a bullpen, you know, sort of gut punch loss for the Brewers, where the bullpen wasn't able to seal the deal. They've been very effective. Devin Williams, Freddie Peralta was good on Sunday. Phelps, as we mentioned, everybody seems to be pulling their weight back there. Switching back to the offensive side real quick, as we sort of wind down here, Christian Yelich, he's hitting home runs. He's and his overall OPS with his ability to get on base, which is very good. His overall OPS is getting better, but still, obviously, this is not the Christian Yelich that we have seen the past two seasons. I'm guessing this is still sort of being chalked up to a mental thing or just a lack of timing. I don't know exactly how it would be described. Has it been broached as possibly, you know, physically? You know, we forget that Christian Yelich, you know, missed the last month of the previous season with a kneecap, and this is his first action back since then. Is it possible that's part of the equation as well, or do you just not think that's, I mean, obviously that was 11 months ago, so I'm not sure that could still be in play, but who knows?
Yeah, no, Craig Counsell dismissed that out of hand very quickly last week, and a reader had tweeted, I did not hear the comment, but he said that Pat Hughes had said something about clearly Yelich is bothered by that knee still, and he didn't look healthy or whatever. And I don't know if that got back to Craig Counsell or what, but he, you know, there's no question. Christian Yelich would not be playing if there was any question about his knee or if there's any question about his health. I mean, I can guarantee you that. So I don't think there's any question that he's feeling okay physically. It's just, you know, getting back up to speed. And again, to plug one of Tom's stories or his column that he wrote talking to Andy Haynes, very, you know, some very interesting points made by Andy Haynes as far as, you know, with the COVID thing and the way things have changed this year. Hitters don't have access to the batting cages like they used to. They don't have access to the video, especially after at-bats. Guys that have relied on that through the course of their career – all of a sudden to have that taken away, that's a huge detriment to them and a huge adjustment that they have to make. I'm not saying that's all the entire reason why Yelich has struggled so badly. I'm sure there's other things that go into it as well. But when you look at the offensive numbers around the league, I think there's certainly something to that because they're definitely down. So, you know, if you take a smaller sample size over the last 10 games or something, you know, he's looking much more like the Christian Yelich of old. And I think by the end of the season, certainly the batting average isn't going to be up to where we're used to seeing it, especially for a guy that's won back-to-back batting titles. But I think that the homers will be there, you know, maybe not the RBIs so much either, but I think by the time everything is said and done here this season, you'll feel better about Christian Yelich going into the offseason, and he will as well, than you did about him, you know, after the first couple of weeks, and everybody's going, what the heck's going on here? So,
as we wind down here, any last thoughts, Todd? I've ended it that way the past two podcasts. Anybody else that's jumped out at you here over the past week?
Yeah, well, I will start out with a couple of younger infielders here. Mark Mathias, how about that guy?
I mean, he's awesome.
I love the guy just from the standpoint of, like, he's so unassuming, just, like, you know, very polite guy, very well-spoken guy, keeps his head down. You know, we talked to him for the first time, obviously, in spring training when he joined the organization, and all that guy's done since he's come to the big leagues is hit and contribute. He's played almost exclusively in the outfield, which he had never done before this season, certainly in the major leagues, since he hadn't played in the major leagues yet. And he's looked okay out there. And Craig Counsell even said Saturday that they're considering trying him in center. So that speaks volumes about what they think about the guy. So it's been very interesting. A couple of doubles in that loss Saturday in Pittsburgh. So he's definitely an intriguing piece and looking more and more like a guy who could be a factor as a spare utility guy moving forward. And then Luis Urias is another guy who, you know, anybody who's listening to this podcast after watching Trent Grisham hit three homers in a game over the weekend against the Astros, probably rolling their eyes. But, you know, you can see what the Brewers like in Urias. Solid defensively. He's got a little bit of a spark in him offensively. So still a long way to go before declaring a winner in that trade one way or the other between the Brewers and the Padres. Certainly the Padres have the upper hand right now, especially with the way Zach Davies has pitched for them. But, you know, you can see the positives in Luis Urias, and he certainly is a guy that's going to factor into their plans over the long term moving forward as well.
I propose Brewers fans upset about that should just chill, let this year be weird, and just cheer for the Padres, because they're not going to play the Brewers, first of all, unless they get to the postseason. They're a fun team. They've got those ex-Brewers part of the equation. They got sweet threads. They're a wild team. They're fun to watch. There's a lot going on in the western part of the, I don't know what to call that, not really a bubble, but the western portion of the MLB season. And Trent Grisham definitely having a great start to his Padres career. Davies as well. He is Todd Rosiak, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter, covering the Milwaukee Brewers. Again, everything he has at jsonline.com. He and Tom Haudricourt keep you covered with everything that's going on with the Milwaukee Brewers. He'll be out there this week as the Brewers open this homestand against the Cincinnati Reds. Todd, be well, be safe, and we will chat with you again very soon.
Sounds good, JR. You as well. Take care.
From there, we go to my conversation with Ethan Small, again, left-handed pitcher out of Mississippi State, first-round draft choice by the Brewers. In 2019, he's hanging out in Appleton, trying to hone his craft with other members of the alternate training site. And, you know, like I said, probably not a guy who's going to be on the Brewers this season, but certainly a name to know for the years ahead. Tall guy, doesn't throw 99 miles an hour, but he is sort of a crafty pitcher. I mean, he's gotten crazy good results, strikeouts included, crazy good results at the minor league level in the limited amount of time that he pitched, and also in college and, you know, all the way back to high school. The guy racks up strikeouts galore, had Tommy John surgery early in his college career, overcame that to sort of change the way he pitches a little bit and become a little bit more of a, you know, craftsman on the mound. It's worked out. His numbers have been good. And I think we're going to be hearing from him in the short term. Is my conversation with Ethan Small. My guest is Ethan Small, top pitching prospect for the Milwaukee Brewers organization, first round draft choice in the year 2019. He's in Appleton right now as part of the alternate training site with several other future Brewers, presumably. And Ethan, I'm going to start with sort of your high school career, first of all. You had 310 strikeouts in 191 innings, if I read that correctly, and you were not drafted. So I need to know why. Like what happened? Somebody missed you, I guess.
Right. Gosh, thinking back to high school, that feels like so long ago now. Pretty much, the way I understood it and how the Major League Baseball draft works, it's kind of like if you don't really agree to a set. I mean, I was pretty set on going to college anyway, but. Pretty much, I didn't really agree to any of the numbers, and nobody was going to pick me pretty much if I didn't want the 200,000-300,000 teams were offering me. So I kind of just passed on it.
And then you're from not far from Nashville. And my understanding is Vanderbilt was one of the teams that was in on you, and they had won the College World Series in 2014. So that's a pretty high profile program. And yet you ended up going to Mississippi State. So give me a sense of what that recruiting path was like and how hard it was to say no to Vandy.
It was kind of a roller coaster ride, man. Gosh, these old memories coming out now.
We got to start at the beginning and then we'll get to the current stuff.
So basically my recruiting journey was, it was wild. Cause I actually committed to Vanderbilt, I believe sometime during my sophomore year of high school. And I hadn't really ran into any real type of velocity. I was a tall, really lanky then. Still kind of lanky now, but then, I mean, you can imagine I was very thin, not throwing very hard. I just had a kind of a knack for pitching and, you know, working my way around hitters and stuff. So I committed really early, and around then I believe there was some coaching turnover going on at Vandy. And just with how the money was going to work out, it was going to be a little bit expensive for me to go there. So then I start looking at some other in-state options in Tennessee and Austin Peay and whatever. And Austin Peay comes at me with this full ride offer. And it's like, wow, that's pretty incredible. Whatever. Fast forward a little bit. I run into a little bit of ELO, start pumping 93s in there at some high school tournaments and stuff like that. So, and then I was like, man, do I want to kind of go for this? And I remember playing at I guess it would have been like a fall showcase thing that our Doolin's Dodgers summer organization was playing it at Mississippi State, and John Cohen, our AD now, was the head coach back then, pretty much said, yeah, man. He was like, and this was probably on into almost signing day my senior year, so all the athletic money's used up. He's like, you can walk on if you want, and he said, we'd love to have you. And I just said, you know what, I'm gonna go for it. And I just walked on and somehow managed to stick around. So
and where this velocity come from? Is that just getting stronger, getting bigger, or is it was there some method to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a lot of physical development, and I did have a little run in with some weighted ball training, and really just probably just my physicality. I mean, just got a little bit more physical as I got older.
And then you did get drafted by the Diamondbacks a year before the Brewers came calling. How close were you to signing with the D-backs that year? Was it close? Was it like one of those deadline things, like what you're talking about here before?
It probably like less than 3% chance that was going to
happen. Oh, okay.
It was kind of one of those things. And, you know, one of my teammates, Brent Rooker, who's with the Twins now in AAA and hanging out with them wherever their taxi squad is, he was kind of a similar deal. I mean, I think he was going to go that year before he went in the first or comp, whatever it was. And it's kind of one of those things you just kind of gamble on yourself and think you're going to have a better year the next year, and it pays off.
When you think of the College World Series and pitching in Omaha, I mean, you had a very good start in Omaha. You had a couple of mixed bag starts, but so what do you think of? Is that, I mean, that has to be an incredible experience, but like what sort of sticks out about that for you?
I think Omaha, it's, I'll say this about it. It's really hard to get there. And then when you get there, I mean, it's like blank slate for everyone, and you've got to compete with the best teams in the country. And it kind of is a crap. If to me, it kind of is a crapshoot at sometimes. Obviously, you think the best team's going to win, but you know, baseball is a crazy sport where anything can happen. So Omaha is kind of like one of those things, man. You've really got to take advantage of your first two games and get ahead.
Yeah. As far as coming back from Tommy John surgery, how would you describe sort of the process of rediscovery? Because there's been a lot written that your velocity didn't come all the way back initially, and so you've sort of maybe refined your repertoire a little bit to compensate for that. And obviously the results have been there. So how difficult was that? Was it something you kind of always had in your bag of tricks and were just sort of able to access it? Like, how do you describe that?
I would say this probably goes back to my freshman year in college. I was still a low 90s guy then, but even in the spring, it's just like with the atmosphere and everything, I was able to ramp it up and even sometimes get up in the upper 90s. And that was kind of my job that year, was to come in and throw three fastballs to a guy, strike him out, and go sit on the bench. So that was kind of my job. So I'll say for that part of it, you know, that was kind of just that was me that year. And personally, that's really never been the kind of guy I was. I was always more of a crafty, like, get better as the game goes kind of thing. So, and with Tommy John especially, I mean, it's a surgery with a very high success rate. But I think the reason is because it's so successful is that because, you know, people, I mean, it takes a long time and you've got to be really committed. And if you do everything the right way and the way you're supposed to, I think, you know, it works out the way you want and everything. But I had a lot of time to, I mean, just work on off speed stuff. And that was kind of my big thing, is just getting all my arsenal kind of rounded out where I needed it to be to actually be able to compete and go those longer, be able to start, and then B, you know, make it two or three times in order.
We're only talking about 21 innings if we talk about your pro debut last year, but the numbers are pretty good. Like, the numbers are incredible. Even a jump up from really what you're doing in college, I don't know how seriously you take those 21 innings or what that means for your confidence or whatever, but that's a tough thing to do, to just show up, you know, halfway through a season and just blow people away at the minor league level. So, you know, do you attribute that jump to anything? Is that, I mean, would you call that, I don't know, beginner's luck is probably unfair, but like, what do you sort of, I guess, what do you attribute that all to?
No, I think it's, I really had a commitment this past year to, I mean, pounding the strike zone and limiting walks. And the way I started to see in the correlation, not obviously exact, and somebody might do the numbers and prove me completely wrong here, but but it's just walks compared to earned runs. It always, for me, it always felt really similar to, like, really close to the same number. So I was thinking, you know, if I can limit walks, I'll limit the runs I give up, eliminate free passes. And, you know, you may give up a home run here or there because you're throwing too many strikes. But for me, I just wanted to, I mean, the strikeouts were going to be what they were. And then I wanted my walk rate to be really low. And then I think everything in between would just take care of itself.
For those who aren't familiar, maybe describe your repertoire a little bit. I know you also tinker with, you know, different windups, different timing things. Like, how would you describe yourself as a pitcher?
That's hard. So I think, I mean, I throw four pitches now, just added a slider that I'm liking, and it's working well. I just need some hitters to swing out a little more, give me a little more feedback. But that's one thing I'm working on here in Appleton. I would say I'm a very mental pitcher. I think I try to beat people with my brain as much as I do with, you know, the physical stuff and, the timing and all that stuff. That's kind of just, man, it's hard to describe. That's kind of like the next step. Once everything, if I have everything working on a certain day, if I have everything for strikes, if I'm feeling good, velocity's there, then the timing and stuff, all that playing around would come in after that. Because to me, it's like, the timing and the messing with it and all that stuff is like the last step as far as it comes to, like, you know, rounding out and being the best I can be. So if I can, and you'll see a lot of times, a lot of these scrimmages, I haven't really done it a whole bunch because I want to make sure everything's where I need it to be, with me being able to do it in the same motion before I want to start throwing it all and doing all this crazy stuff.
Right. Did you model that aspect of your, like, for example, the Brewers have a lefty, Brent Suter, who's kind of like that. I mean, he just works fast all the time, but there are guys who mess, Johnny Cueto is a good example, a guy who just messes with stuff. Did you model that part of your game after anybody else, or did that just sort of come naturally?
Right. I think there was some influence there. I'm not sure exactly by who. I don't think I just looked at one singular guy and was like, I'm going to try this. And I'll tell you where it happened, actually. It was in the College World Series. We were playing Oregon State. and Nick Madrigal comes up to the plate. And I look up to the scoreboard, and he struck out, I think then it was 5 times all year. And I don't know who keeps up with strikeout numbers, but that is incredible. How do you only strike out 5 times an entire college baseball season? And that's just a testament to how good of a hitter he was. So I was like, I've got to do something. So I pulled this out of my bag of tricks, and I'd play around with it one time. And I think it was like a curveball that kind of floated over the outside edge or something. I finally got him on for strikeout number 6. And from then on, I was like, maybe there's something to it. And then in the fall, our fall college season, I kind of played around with it a little more. And then as I got more confident in the spring, and I actually learned that with a certain windup I do, I throw a little bit harder with it because I think my body lines up better. So it's kind of one of those things. I didn't really plan on doing it. It wasn't something I studied a whole lot. It just kind of happened, and I kind of just let it run its course.
And now Nick Madrigal making his major league debut this season. You've probably seen that, and I'm sure you've been around a bunch of guys that are ascending at upper levels of whatever the minor leagues are this year. What is your relationship to that idea of being a top pitching prospect or one of the guys in the Brewers organization that everybody is focused on? I mean, there's obviously a lot of lists out there, but people know your name even though they haven't seen you pitch. How does that resonate with you?
I've tried to not get too caught up in any lists and rankings because pretty much for my whole life, I've been on the bottom end or the, I guess, I don't even know what you say. I mean, I was a walk-on in my first year in college. Yeah. I was undrafted in high school. But for me, I just try to put together performances over the course of a season, like I said, by limiting that walk rate. And I think I wouldn't call myself somebody who pitches to create good stats, but at the same time, it's like, I know if I focus on certain things, if I look up after a season, the numbers are going to be pretty good if I do that all year.
It's probably, I imagine, nice that you were able to pitch in Appleton before this experience. So, you know, Appleton, you know, the area, you know what it's like to be on that field and stuff like that. But this is, I'm sure, super different. Just give me a sense of what life is like inside the, I don't know if we're even calling it a bubble, but inside Appleton. Like, are you guys able to do anything outside of like hotel to field?
Right. I'll tell you this. There's been some golfing going on.
Yes.
We're working on the shot a little bit. Hasn't gone super great, but we're getting better every time out.
All right. That's important. Highcliff State Park in the neighborhood. I grew up not far from there. So it's a little bit outside, you know, a little bit outside the city, but it's a good course. Before I let you go, I want to get a scouting report on a couple guys that you're training with down there. Antoine Kelly is another left-handed pitcher drafted right after you last season. He's quite a bit younger than you, but you know, he's a guy that there's some excitement around him. What does he bring to the table?
I think Antoine, I mean, the stuff is electric, right? I mean, nobody's going to argue with the stuff. I think for him, it's strictly experience. It's experience. It's being around everybody. It's getting used to the system. Same with me too. I mean, you know, I'm fairly new in it as well. But for him, it's strictly experience, getting used to it. And I think being comfortable in front of a crowd, you know, being confident enough to throw the ball in the zone. And I think he's going to be very, very, very successful.
How about at the other end of the battery, Mario Feliciano? The Brewers haven't had a lot of catching prospects in a while, and now they've got a few of them, and that's a guy who's near the front. What should fans expect out of Mario Feliciano?
Man, he's got a really good arm, and he's got a really good bat. And I've had the pleasure of throwing to him a couple times so far, and he's done a really good job. And I think was he 20, 21 or so?
I think so.
Sorry, Mario, if we messed that up. But no, I mean, he's another guy. I mean, you're going to see him up pretty soon. I think he's just doing really well, and I hope he continues to do so.
Is it different being in this scenario, knowing that you're probably not going to get called up? You're with guys that are, you know, maybe on the 40-man roster or have a really good chance. I mean, it's different for you and for the other guys I just mentioned, but it's different for you than it is for those guys. Is that weird? Like, is that just sort of, are you taking this in separately, you think, than some other guys? Like, I guess I'm just trying to get a better sense of what this experience is like for you, this right. Bizarre season we're in.
It almost feels like a spring training 2.0 kind of vibe, but just maybe a little bit more, I guess maybe not more. It's just very development focused. And for me, it's just not worrying about where I'm going to be next year, major league this year. I'm not really worried about that at all either. It's just kind of, What do I have to do every day to kind of better myself and then go into this off season healthy and then be able to come back to spring training strong and healthy next year?
He is Ethan Small, Brewers' top pitching prospect. He's in Appleton with the 60-man player pool. Thanks for joining us, Ethan. I really appreciate it. Take care.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
That will do for today. Thanks to Todd Rosiak and Ethan Small for joining me on the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. Once again, you can find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Rating and review. Please, 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 please. If you're sitting at a laptop right now, just rate us, review us. Let us know what you think. You can find me on Twitter at JR Radcliffe. Find Todd Rosiak on Twitter. He is easy to find. And let us know what you think. Thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate you guys keeping up with us at a time when you know, it's all so weird. I don't know how many of you even have commutes. I don't. I sit in my house all day, doing podcasts, writing stories, doing whatever I can. You may not be able to fit podcasts too easily into your new normal. But if you do, I really appreciate you listening to us, keeping up with what's going on with the Milwaukee Brewers. We will hit you back again next week. Thanks for tuning in. Bye bye.